Today we have a very beautiful subject, Karma Yoga, or the art of right action. As we had studied in this particular text, the student, after having seen the world and seen all the problems and difficulties, having enjoyed and accomplished, still realized that there is something more to life than just sense enjoyment, develops an attitude that I am a servant of the Lord, and then through that, he meets his teacher, whom he asks certain pertinent questions. Who am I? What is this world? Who is God? And so on. And the teacher, after having cleared his doubts completely in this particular scripture, the student then experiences that state of realization which we saw. And in that realized state, he sees the oneness, that me and that world is one, that divinity is not separate from me. His little ego merges into that infinite consciousness, and he realizes that ultimately when this ego disappears, the only thing that is left is Om, that consciousness. And that is the final state of realization which we should all aspire to. We all should work for that. And then he sees that this world which used to give me joy and sorrow, and I used to have problems and suffering, now everything is joy. Everything is that Lord alone. And that beautiful, joyful state he experiences. And then how does he work in the world? Does he change his behavior or does he continue? You say, unless your behavior changes, otherwise, you know, this knowledge has not served any purpose. Unless you fundamentally alter how you have been living your life, otherwise you are wasting your time and the teacher's time. So does this person change? Let us see in verse number 15, in page 47. Asit purame nijakartamitihi. Asit purame nijakartamatihi. Prapta yayame chiradukha samsritihi. Prapta mayame chiradukha samsritihi. Shithili krita sa kriti yoga dwara. Shithili krita sa kriti yoga dwara. Bodhena daso hamitishvarasya. Tena daso hamitishvarasya. So he says, the student, asit purame, asit, I was earlier, in me, what was in me? This sense of doership, that I do, I am the doer, I am so great, I am so wonderful, I do this, I do that, I am this, I am that. So doership means not only what I do, but what I am, you know, all that, I am this, I am that, all that I had. And what did that give me? By that, for me, only thing by this doership, all I got was continuous sorrow. Not sorrow for a day or a week or a month, continuous sorrow I had. You did? Yep, I had it. So he says, then what happened to that sense of sorrow? How did you weaken it? How did you weaken it? Shithili krita. Shithili krita means I made that sense of sorrow, that sense of doership, I weakened it. Sa, that, how? So by the karma yoga, which we will talk about. And then what happened? Then I got this knowledge. What knowledge? Bodhena dasaha. Dasaha means servant. Aham iti ishvarasya. Ishvarasya means of the Lord. I am the servant. So with that knowledge, I now function in the world. So we'll talk briefly about this beautiful verse. And I thought in this verse, actually I have to thank all of you, because it is because of you that I was able to revise the whole third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. I haven't read it in a long time. And last night I went through the shlokas, and this afternoon, and I was so grateful. I said, look, the Lord is so kind to me that otherwise, you know, these things normally you never read. You know, who has time to sit down, but I have to prepare for the class. So it helps me much more than it helps any of you. So even if it doesn't help anybody, I am grateful. I am thankful to the Guru and to the Lord for this wonderful opportunity. So he says, Asit Purame. So I had this idea that I am the doer, and then as a result of the doership, I get the enjoyership. Because I do something, I succeed, aha, I get the joy. Then I fail, then I get the sorrow. So enjoyership means the experiencership. So I do it, and if I do well, I get happiness. I don't do well, I get sorrow. But they said there is continuous sorrow. Why do you mean by continuous sorrow? And what is the meaning of doership? Doership, as we understand, that whenever I comes, I do it, I am so and so. You don't know who I am. You don't know how many contacts I have. You know, the governor, I can just pick up the phone and call him. And senators and all. You know, I mean, that kind of, you know, or I belong to this country club and I live in this exclusive neighborhood and I drive the Tesla that only three other people in Bakersfield have. So that kind of ego. But how does it lead us to continuous sorrow? Why does, what's Swami Tejomayanandaji, when he was talking about this verse, the head of the Chinmaya Mission, he says, our life is sorrow, 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 sorrow. Little bit of joy, then again sorrow, sorrow, then joy, then sorrow. It's mostly sorrow broken by flashes of joy. And which is true, if you look at it, you know, life for the average person, there's so much stress, continuous stress, family problems, work problems, then economy is bad, so he gets laid off of work, or health, you know, he doesn't have now health insurance, you know, has gone up so much, you know, the deductibles have gone up, he cannot go get medical care, and then his health is deteriorating, then the mental stress, and then, you know, intellectually he thinks, I know my job. And suddenly what happens? They introduce a new computer system, you know, meaningful use. Now we are going through that. So now there is this brand new system you have to learn. And suddenly what happens? He's now outdated. And some young 25-year-old guy comes and he knows this system. So this guy who has been working in this firm for 25, 30 years, sorry, sir, we don't need you. So by age 50, he's, you know, unemployed. Unemployed, unemployable. So life is a series of sorrowful experiences. Yeah, there is joy. Yeah, there is joy here and there. But the end result of everything is sorrow. Because even when I get something, I am afraid of losing it. And I'm afraid that somebody will take it. And so this sense of doership and enjoyership leads to ego. I. And men especially have a very well-developed sense of ego, all of us. Women still, you know, because their nature is nurturing and helping and giving, they have less, but we have a major problem. This reminds me of a beautiful story. It's a most wonderful story. There was this man who was telling his friend, he says, you know, I play the bagpipes. You know, those that Scottish instrument, bagpipes, you know. So he said, I'm a very good player. And so one time I was invited by a funeral director to play at the funeral of a homeless man. He said this homeless man had died and he has no family, no friends. And he's being buried in some remote, you know, burial spot, which is for the poor people way in the backwoods, you know, because he cannot get prime burial. So, but there is nobody. So will you at his service at least come and play the bagpipes? So I said, okay, you know, that'll be my service to this poor guy who was homeless, who died without family and friends. So he says, so I decided to drive. And I got lost because this was the days before GPS. So I got lost because it was in the remote boonies. But being a man, I don't ask for directions. I never stopped. So I kept searching. Reached an hour late after the time of the ceremony. I reached an hour late and I got there. And looked like everybody was gone. Just the workers were there, the diggers. And there was the grave site. It had already been covered. And apparently the funeral director, the hearse, everybody had left. And there was just a covered grave with the steel thing. And the workers were eating lunch. And I said, you know, this poor homeless man died without anything. What can I do for him? So I said, let me play my bagpipes for this poor person. So I started playing, and I played with all my heart, because this man had no one to, you know, who could even come to his funeral. And I played Amazing Grace, and beautifully, my whole heart I poured out into that, and the music just flowed. I have never played like that. And the workmen also stopped eating lunch, and they came around me. And then one of them, you know, they were so touched by that music, one of them started weeping. All of them started weeping, and I was weeping too. And I finished that piece, just tears were running down my cheeks. But I felt good inside, you know, that I had done, you know, something. So I picked up my bagpipes, and I was walking to the car. One of the workmen says, "That was most beautiful. I have never seen anything like this, and I have been putting in septic tanks for 20 years. So that is the kind of ego we have, where we think that I don't need anybody's help. You know, I can do it on my own. And that brings sorrow, like for this man, you know. It brings us sorrow. So he says, what is the solution? He says, karma yoga. Karma yoga we have talked about briefly, but karma briefly is to summarize. Karma means action. Yoga comes from yuj, from unite. So action united with the higher. Higher could be the Lord, or could be a big higher cause, like dedicate for my nation, or I work for my state, or my community, or my church, or my, you know, even for my extended family. You know, anything that is service that is done beyond I and mine is karma yoga. Beyond, I mean, I and my family is one unit, but if I do anything beyond that, that is called karma yoga. And what is the definition of karma yoga? Unselfish actions dedicated to God. In the book also, there is a beautiful verse by Raman Maharishi, who was a great saint. He says, Ishwar arpitam nechayakritam chitta shodakam mukti sadakam. So he says, Ishwar arpitam, dedicated to God, na ichchayakritam, unselfish deeds. What happens? Chitta shodakam mukti sadakam. They lead to purity of mind and help you towards, take you towards liberation. So what is purity of mind? As we have learned before many times in the previous text, when I have selfishness, greed, jealousy, you know, I want, and I compete, and I cheat others, and that leads to a lot of negative tendencies in the mind. So as I start sharing, as I do unselfish activities, as I dedicate them to God, so slowly, slowly, even that doership has to go away, that I am the doer, and I dedicate it to the Lord, then slowly, slowly, as I share, it reduces my greed, it reduces my attachment. They say the best way to, you know, get attachment is to see if I can do without it. If I give it away and I'm still fine, that is how, when I have attain mastery over that desire. So as I do more unselfish things, as I dedicate to God, the more I think about Him, the more I bring the Lord into my life, slowly, slowly my mind becomes pure. I develop love and compassion and sharing and kindness. And then slowly my thoughts also become clearer, because the mind that is cluttered with negativity is unable to sit. Even you sit in front of a teacher, even, you know, the greatest teacher may come in front of you, but if your mind is not quiet, it won't absorb anything. So as your mind becomes free of negativities, the mind becomes purer, it becomes available for knowledge. So as you get more knowledge, and as your mind becomes purer, the doership goes away. Then instead of doership, it becomes instrumentship. I was a doer first, but now I have become an instrument of the Lord. The Lord, you work through me. So you are the writer, I am the pen. So even if I have written a novel or a poetry or a beautiful piece, I am the pen, you are writing through me. If I have delivered a good speech, or if I have written a good piece of poetry, or made a beautiful architectural drawing, or done something very successful, helped a difficult patient, Oh Lord, you are the instrument. You cured this patient. I didn't. You made this bridge. I didn't. So that doership goes away, and slowly, slowly, that person becomes an instrument of the Lord. The I has to go away, because as long as the I is there, actually there was a famous saint, Kabir Das Ji, who says the path of love is very narrow. If I am there, then he is not there. And if he is there, then I cannot be there. Two people cannot walk on that path. So the less you have bring the I, the more he comes in. He or she or what it, whatever the consciousness. But the Lord only will appear when I disappear. So that path of love is very narrow. One has to constantly remember that. And two cannot exist. It does not mean that I become just useless or worthless. In fact, when I become a servant of the Lord, then he works through me, then I have the immense power of the whole universe. I can channel that because he is infinitely powerful. I, with my limited power, what could I do? But when the Lord is working through me, I become the prophet, I become a great saint, I can move mountains, I can perform miracles, I can heal the sick, I can do anything. Why? Because the Lord can do anything. So the servant of the Lord becomes the Lord himself. Just as an ambassador of the United States, when he's in Brazil or Africa or somewhere, he has the power of the whole United States government behind him. And when he speaks for the president of the United States. He speaks for the cabinet, for the whole country. And he can, you know, make a lot of decisions which, you know, people respect. Okay, he represents this country. So when I represent the Almighty Lord, the United States is nothing compared to that. United States is just one little country in this earth. It's a small part of this whole earth. And then this earth is a very small. I sent everybody that blue dot. You must have got that. How insignificant is that blue dot, this earth, compared to this whole universe? And in that universe, there are multiple such universes, and multiple such Milky Ways, and multi such galaxies, and billions of stars. They say there are more stars than there are grains of sand on the beach. That means. And when, where am I, this little earth? And in that little earth, there is this country called US, and then there is this state called California. And then in this state of California, where there is like, I don't know, 20, 30 million people, then there is this city called Bakersfield, which has 300,000 people. And out of that 300,000, I am one little person, you know? Who am I? And also, in as far as the size, I mean, there's 7 billion. I'm only one of 7 billion. You know, we get so much self-importance. I do so much. I help so many people. In reality, we, if you look at the, and not only in size, but look at the time. Okay, I live for 70 years. I think, oh, I did so much in 70 years. But the universe has been in existence for billions of years and will continue. And this is only one universe. There have been so many universes before that that have come and gone. So in those billions and billions and billions of years, my 70 years, it's like a blink of an eye. So when you realize that, when you see that, then you realize that ego is for what? You know, what have I accomplished? It does not mean that I am useless or I am worthless, but I have to realize that there is only one power that is doing everything. Everything is happening because of his grace. Even this hand I am raising, because of God's grace. You know, otherwise, who am I? A piece of flesh. I mean, whatever I have is... So that one has to understand and constantly remember that the Lord is the one doing everything. He is the doer. I am just an instrument. He is the doer. I am just an instrument. And that attitude, when one develops, then what happens? He sees the whole world as God. Then when he's serving, even the ego that I am serving is not there. Why? Because everybody is that same divinity. The Lord is there. Everything is that one divinity. Ashtamurti Bhrit Deva Pujanam. He says, what is true service and what is true prayer? So he says, what is true prayer? is seeing the world as the eightfold form of God. Because they say God has eight forms. You say, well, God is so infinite. Yeah, but when you see him in a human being, God has eight forms. And what are the eight forms? Five are the elements: space, air, fire, water, earth. Space, air, fire, water, earth, mind, intellect, and ego. So eight constitutes the human being. So the body is made up of the five elements: air, space, fire, water, earth, mind, intellect, and the ego, the perceiver, feeler, and thinker. So this eightfold form of God is this whole universe. If you look at a tree, tree is the same too. Tree also is made of air, space, fire, water, earth, has a rudimentary mind and intellect, does not have much intelligence, but the tree also knows I have to grow upwards. The tree, if it's inside a room, will grow towards light. And then has a little sense of ego, because even a plant, when you prick it or poke it, it moves away. Plants grow better when you play good music. Well, if you, you know, you shout at the plant or yell at the plants don't grow. They have done studies. So even plants have the eightfold, you know, the body of five elements: mind, intellect, and ego. And of course, it's better developed in dogs, cats, and all, and then the highest in humans. So seeing the world and serving the world. So when I'm serving somebody, it's not that I'm doing that person a favor, or that I should become arrogant that I am such a great servant of the Lord, that the Lord alone is in that individual. So when I serve him, I am seeing the Lord, I am serving the Lord. The ability to serve has come from the Lord. The one who is serving me is the Lord, and the one that is being served is also the Lord. So that sense of total surrender comes when the person sees the whole universe as an expression of the God, of God. And then all actions are done in the Yajna spirit. The Yajna spirit is covered beautifully in the third and in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Yajna means offering. So in the olden days, they used to have a fire, like a fire pit, and where the community, it would be a center in the center of the town, and the community would gather to on special occasions, like festivals and all, they would light a fire to propitiate the gods. And so these fire and these offerings were made for the welfare of the whole village or the whole town or the whole community. And so people would all gather together and put offer food and wood and, you know, whatever they could bring. Whoever could, and somebody couldn't bring food, they would clean that place, or they would serve the food, or they would cook. So the whole community would gather and there would be communal prayers, and the priests would be chanting mantras and swaha and offerings into the fire. And those fires, the offerings were made to the higher powers for the benefit of the village or the community. In the modern days, we don't have those fires, but we see examples of the Yajna spirit everywhere. Like when John F. Kennedy in 1962, he said, you know, it's the goal of this nation to put a man on the moon by the end of the decade. So the whole nation got behind that idea that we have to sink our individual differences for that higher goal. So engineers and scientists and pilots and, you know, computer, you know, geniuses and all other, you know, aircraft manufacturers, they all got together. The money was raised. The government got behind this project. So that is an example of where the whole community sank its differences for a higher goal, that we need to do something in space. Or when a community gets together and builds a hospital or a school or a, you know, church or some. So that is called Yajna spirit, where people sink their differences and work together for the benefit of all, not for the benefit of one individual, but for the benefit of the community. So that person works in the Yajna spirit. So what has happened is, from action, first there was action, then came devotion, where he became a servant of the Lord, and then comes the knowledge. And what is the knowledge? When the doership finally goes, when the ego is completely gone, completely disappeared, then the spirit alone remains. So then person understands, I am that Holy Spirit. I am that eternal consciousness. And all activities are happening by this body in my presence. I am not involved. The body is working, and whatever is happening by divine grace, but I am not involved. I am the Spirit alone. So then even that sense of, even that servant of the Lord goes away, because then he becomes one. Then there is no master and there is no servant. Then who is going to serve who when everything is one? It's not an ego. It's not that I am God, but that I completely disappears and God alone remains. So such a person then becomes, you know, a saint or a prophet or a guru. So this is how this slowly you see the evolution from initially from selfish action to unselfish action, then to devotion. So the path of action, karma, then the path of bhakti or devotion to the Lord as a servant of the Lord, and ultimately the knowledge that I am that. So through this, you can see the evolution of the individual's thinking and the individual's actions. And the individual's motive. It is mostly the motive that is important. Actions are the same. That this person will still get up in the morning and brush his teeth and go to work. And like Vimalji, the one who is going to be speaking tomorrow, he's a vice president at a university, New Mexico State University. He has a very prestigious post. He has a $15 million budget or even more than that. And he does all that. But in his mind, he's not a doer. He does every action. He looks, for all practical purposes, he looks like you and me. He wears same shirt and pant and goes to work. But inside, he lives in that understanding that I am not that spirit. And so sometimes it is very hard to tell who is evolved, who is not, who is realized, who is not. It's only when you closely live and work with these great individuals that you see how they work, and that they are at a different level from you and I. It's really the Lord's blessings that we get such wonderful people to come to. All the way from New Mexico, he has flown just for, you know, for three talks. I mean, he's not getting anything out of it. If we make a donation, it goes to his mission. You know, he doesn't keep anything. So he's just coming. Why? Because my guru has taught me and it is my duty. And he's flying every weekend or every other weekend. You know, sometimes he's in Chicago and sometimes he's in Orlando, just sharing this beautiful knowledge. That is these wise people. It's such a privilege to meet them and listen to them. So take advantage of every opportunity you get. It's truly a blessing for us.
But why did it happen?
I think ignorance. Ignorance, not knowing who I am, I project, you know, this entity upon myself. And over lifetimes, because what happened was that initially life was just, you had to just survive. To survive, you had to have this strong sense of I. You know, even for a crab, he has to protect himself. So he has to run away from dangerous predators. And he has to grab and attack, you know. So just the survival of the species depended upon this sense of I. And so until animals, it was okay. And even humans, in the early humans, when they were in the caves and in the forests and all these dinosaurs were attacking them and lions and all, they had to run, fight and flight and all. So the ego was necessary. But then what happened is that the ego then become so strong because they realize, okay, the ego helps me to survive. But then it's not only survival, now I want to acquire more. See, it start out by just being survival, but then that I must have more power, I must have more security. Okay, today I have food, but maybe tomorrow I won't. So I must collect more food. I must even take the neighbor's food and, you know, store it. And then I have my little house, but that's not. So, you know, slowly it grew with over lifetimes of evolution, I think. I don't know. I may be wrong. I never thought about it. It just occurred to me. But it's a good question. Maybe we can ask Vimalji tomorrow.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, we can ask him. But I think it came from that and then just got strengthened over evolution. And now it has become so unchecked because we have so much power. You know, people have guns in their house, you know, Uzi machine guns where they can kill 100 people just like that. And they have these powerful cars and they have all this money and, you know, own this company. So I think the more you, it's a manifestation of ignorance, I think. And it's just a perversion of the instinct of survival where it has become so strong. I mean, you need some things to survive, but the perversion of that is ego, and then that leads to pride, I think.
Yeah.
True. Also, modern living is very conducive to developing the ego. Because in the olden days, especially in India, but even here, people lived in a joint family where the grandfather lived home, the parents lived home, the children lived home. Sometimes the children got married and they still continue to live, you know, in the one room, and then the uncles. So when there is this huge family, then one person's ego doesn't get a chance to flourish. I have to look at the benefit of the whole family. The grandfather is the strong person who decides and everybody follows. But as the joint family broke up and, you know, the rural life got destroyed, and then we started living in cities in these single one-room apartments, and only husband, or then you know, I alone, then maybe wife, and that also they, you know, they're just living together, then they don't have children, or even if they do, you know, this sense of just for me and my wife, or at the most me and my child. So that ego gets strengthened, because then there is no grandfather, or there is no parents. Parents are somewhere else, or they are in the village, and you are here in the city. And that I and my becomes very strong, because then there you have no one to listen. You don't have to listen to anybody. I do what I want. You know, if I want it, I'll do it. I don't care. So this attitude, I think, also the modern living is also very conducive to developing the ego, because we have got so much isolated. We have so much separate. So the isolation. So, and also the whole society, as she said, is geared towards excellence. Oh, I have to exceed. I have to succeed. So 30, 40, 50 years, you have continuously developed this I. And then when you go to the teacher, he says, turn at 180 degrees. Now weaken this I, which I took 50 years to build it. Now you want me to weaken? Yes, that is the only way. So I think it's a combination of many factors. I think. But that's a very good question. It made us all think.
That's going to get me
solved. True. The way you treat your parents, your children will treat you. It's very clear, because they see what you do and they copy that. So if you don't call your parents, you don't respect them, they won't call you, they won't respect you. It's very clear. It's very, very clear. Absolutely. Good point. Thank you.
What goes along comes along. So it's good.
Right.
Until my nephew is good treating his dad, my brother. You know, he doesn't treat him good as...
No, that's a good point. It's hard to comprehend, but the fact is that but the learning of the scriptures, why do we read all this or listen to it? Because this knowledge tells you that you are the waker and helps you to wake up. It is like in the dream when the tiger comes and suddenly you wake up because you were in the forest. The tiger was an instrument for you to wake up, but here either suffering wakes you up. Some people have to go through a lot of suffering and then they wake up. That's a tiger. Or this knowledge where the guru is coming and telling you that you are the waker and wake up. And so that's the value. That's the only value of learning the scriptures. Otherwise, the scriptures at the end have to be dropped also. That's what they say. I don't know yet. I'm still holding on to the scriptures. But that's what they say, that for a wise person, even the scriptures are unnecessary for him. Just as if there is flood, now that well is of no use. In the Gita, it says it very beautifully. He says the well is useful when you need to go get water. But suppose the whole village is flooded, then you don't need the well because there is water everywhere. So the wise person is living in that state. So he doesn't need, you and I still need to go to the well of the scriptures to drink, but he is living in that flood of that. So That is the difference. So he has woken and we are still in the dream. No, in fact, in our scriptures, they talk about four yugas. Sati yuga, that is the yuga of goodness, and then the mediocre, and then the less, and then the worst, which we are in right now, the lowest. But after the lowest comes again Satyuga. It's like a cycle, the best, the medium, less, and then the worst, and then the good starts. So that's, she's right, the good has already started. And that's why people are reading this and listening to this, and we are seeing more and more realized masters like Eckhart Tolle and Swami Chinmayananda and Raman Maharishi and Swami Tejomayananda and all these great souls, Dada Vaswani, so many, you know, wonderful teachers, Wayne Dyer and all that, who are becoming popular because of Eckhart Tolle, because of this awakening which is happening. So, yeah, there is hope for mankind.